It's time for Windows Weekly. We have a CEO. Habemos CEO. It's Satya Nadella, and we'll talk about him, what this means for Microsoft, what happened to Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer, and a whole lot more. Windows Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 348, recorded February 5th, 2014. What would Satya do? Windows Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Are you looking to upgrade your IT skills or prepare for certification? IT Pro TV offers engaging and informative tutorials streamed to your Roku, your mobile device, or your computer. For 50% off the lifetime of your account, go to itpro.tv/ww and use the code WW50. And by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size, easily and securely, with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter Windows. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to Audible.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers, Microsoft. And all the machinations and the behind-the-scenes rivalries, the leaks, the scoops. If it happens in Redmond, these two know about it. Mary Jo Foley of the All About Microsoft site at ZDNet, long-time Microsoft watcher. You're a watcher.
I am. I'm
Microsoft
a watcher.
Watcher. Paul Thurrott. Not a watcher.
More of a lurker.
He's a stalker.
The creepy in the bushes kind of...
He's the supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. And between the two of you, there's nobody knows more about what's going on at Microsoft. And, of course, it happened. We can stop speculating. How long did this CEO search take? 6 months.
Five or six months, yeah.
Ballmer gave him a year, didn't he? He said by the end of next year. So he gave him a year.
Yep.
But nobody wanted it to take a long time, as both you and Paul have observed. It's bad for morale. Nobody wants to do anything because you want to see who it's going to be.
Yeah. Plus, I'm sure everybody was so sick of the leak stories. It was like, oh, here's another one, you know, and should I believe this one or shouldn't I believe this one? So it was great to see that this has finally been laid to rest.
But what is Alan Mulally going to do next?
May his name never cross our lips again. Or any of those other Paul Maritz.
Siren.
So let's deconstruct. First of all, what happened? We should probably say that for those of you who are just tuning in.
Right. So on Tuesday, Microsoft announced at 9 a.m. Eastern time that Satya Nadella is going to be the third CEO of Microsoft ever. And his first day was that very day. He started when they announced it.
Wow.
No coming up to speed, no, you know, interim period. It's, yep, you're on.
That company is your problem.
That leads one to believe that he knew for a little while and had enough time to, you know, Steve had enough time to move the furniture out. And
yeah.
Satya had enough time to pick some throw pillows a little.
I just read a journal story today that said Steve Ballmer actually moved his stuff out on Monday.
Yeah.
And Satya moved
in. They have more time than the president has.
Yeah.
I watched The Butler last night. And it turns out that basically during the inauguration, the staff has 2 hours to take all the old stuff out and put the new stuff in.
Wow.
It's during the inauguration. That's it. The guy, you know, president wakes up in the morning, puts on his top hat, rides out in his carriage to the inauguration stand. And then the staff goes, quick, get rid of his crap.
You got to watch that the Mitt documentary, not to get off on a
I hear that's cycle, very good, yeah.
But the reason it's interesting is because, you know, the guy runs for president, loses, and then he flies somewhere and drives to his house. And then he just walks in the door, locks the door, sits in his chair, looks out the window, he's home.
I'm not president.
You just spent years, You know, I mean, so imagine Steve Ballmer.
Yeah, what does he do?
He's going to wake up. He woke up this morning. Now what?
I used to hold the reins of power in my hand. Now I'm holding an Xbox controller.
It's got to be weird, right? That's got to be an awkward transition.
Yeah.
Yeah. He does stay on the board, though, which is another interesting tidbit about this week's news.
Well, let's finish it. Yeah, because there's more shuffling going on here.
There had been speculation that Steve Ballmer was going to be asked to leave the board or forced to leave the board, but he is not leaving the board. He's staying on. And the other very big change was that Bill Gates is no longer the chairman of the board. John Thompson, who was the head of the search committee and a board member, is now the chairman of the board of Microsoft. And Bill Gates is now a technical advisor and founder, obviously, of the company. And he's going to be advising Satya Nadella on product and strategy for some unknown period of time.
Now, there are two theories about this.
Does one of them involve deck chairs and a famous ocean vessel? Yeah.
Well, one theory is... Well, first of all, it's very unusual, I think, for a new CEO to have both prior CEOs on the board overseeing
him.
Yes. That's could be for continuity's sake, could be because they don't trust him. I don't know. Ballmer is, as we know, the number one stockholder of Microsoft. Bill Gates, number two.
He will be very soon.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. No, I think this is continuity. Microsoft is different. Microsoft's not Exxon either, right? Or, you know, GM or whatever. I mean, it's a different – it's been Bill Gates – Steve Ballmer, tandem, 20 years, whatever. This gives them a transition that's a little more seamless, I think.
And if there is a knock on Satya Nadella, he's a 22-year Microsoft veteran. He has run many different divisions, including online, all the important divisions, except Windows, I think. He never was there or Office. But he's done online. He's done Azure. He's, you know, he's done business enterprise.
He worked on Bing, too.
Yeah, that's what I meant with online. Yeah, Bing.
Online, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, in that sense, he's the consummate insider, but there might be a complaint from, you know, shareholders. Where's the vision? Where's the new ideas? Where's the, you know, this is kind of same old, same old.
Right.
Where's the consumer?
And there's no consumer. So is Bill Gates' new role, I guess the two schools of thought is Bill will have actual duties in coaching Satya for, especially toward consumer and Windows and Office. Or is this pure window dressing?
Yes.
I vote B.
Bill Gates is not going to have an office next to Satya's, and he's not going to sit there and say, well, you know, I think Satya, what you should do. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think so.
He'll call him once a year, twice a year?
No. Here's what Bill Gates actually said, and you've got to really parse his words when you hear what his quote was. He said... In a video interview yesterday, over a third of my time is available to meet with product groups.
All right. So hold on a second. I'm sorry. We need to focus on just that part.
On
that
the word
is
available.
Insane.
A third.
I just want to be clear. How specific is that? One third of my time? Well, what does that mean?
Well, okay.
This guy's time is organized in an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah,
for
of course.
Sure.
Of course.
So I look
very
this
busy
up.
Guy.
As it turns out, yeah, this is actually curious to me. I'm just amazed by how specific that is. Because time is not the work day. Time is like, I take that to mean my waking hours.
Right. He said a third of his time is sleeping. A third of his time is playing Call of Duty.
No, that's not me. It's not him. It's me.
Oh, you.
So.
That would imply there's three. I have three jobs. One is obviously the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. That's one job. What's the other
one? I assume
one?
What he really means is that's two-thirds of his time. I think that's
what he meant.
But you realize before this change that the way he allotted his time was one-fifth of his time was spent on Microsoft.
Supposedly.
One-fifth.
Yeah. What do you mean?
So that's – you could do the math and figure out how much more time he's devoting.
So from one-fifth to one-third – let me get out my calculator.
I know.
It's a 32.7% increase. By the way, I'm being told that I shouldn't say Satya. I should say Satya. Yeah. Satya.
Yeah. You know what? As a bit of comedy, you could watch all four of the introductory videos on Microsoft's website and note that every person who says his name pronounces it differently.
It's true. That is true.
It's true.
And by the way, Satya is a nickname.
Right. Oh no.
His real name is longer, and I'm
his
not.
His real name is Bob. As it turns out, yeah.
Well, he does have a long name, just like Soma Sagar at Microsoft. Yeah. His real first name is not Soma.
Yeah. But that's okay, because in general, Indian names are phonetic. They're easy to pronounce.
Okay, but I'm curious what Mary Jo thinks about this one third. Or I'm sorry.
His real name, by the way, is Nadella Satya Narayana Chowdhury. Just yikes. So you know.
Glad we get to call him Satya.
I thought Therat was bad. Okay. But I'm curious, because I actually look at this somewhat cynically. I think that this Gates thing is really for people to look at and believe that this thing is happening, because people have a romantic notion about Bill Gates. And I look at this as the short term window dressing. But I'm just curious what Mary Jo thinks about this, because I tend to look at this very cynically.
I look at it very cynically too. And the reason I look at it cynically, it's twofold. For one, I don't think Bill Gates ever spent even one fifth of his time at Microsoft after he made the foundation his full-time job. I mean, the guy is busy. He's running all over the world, saving people's lives, right? Basically, that's what he's doing. And, I know people say
that's not a part-time job. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. He was in product meetings sometimes, or he gave an opinion on a strategy, but I don't know. I'm really hard pressed to think he ever gave a fifth of his time, and now is going to donate a third. And to me, the word in that statement that he made is over a third of my time is available. It doesn't mean he's going to spend it on product groups. It means he could hypothetically spend that much, he is saying.
And actually, according to the Borowitz report in the New Yorker, he spent the entire first day back
that
in office.
That is hilarious.
Installing Windows 8.1.
Great.
That's comedy, obviously.
That's good.
It's so great.
That's a good picture.
If you haven't read that, it's hilarious.
as hard as it was, one of the things that emerged about Gates after he stepped down as CEO was that first year, especially first months, was very difficult for him. Letting Steve Ballmer actually make the decisions, and they butted heads, and it's hard, right? When you've done this day to day, and you're the voice and the face of the company, it's hard. Can you imagine, though, today what it must be like for Bill Gates to have to go to a meeting at Microsoft? Seriously.
Yeah.
And someone is saying, not sure we should do these right-click menus and start
the
screen.
Last thing.
And he's like, guys, I'm trying to cure malaria over here. Seriously. Like, it must seem so unimportant compared
to
what he's doing.
I'm guessing that is not what they're going to have Bill Gates do.
No.
I'm guessing that.
I hope not.
I hope not. It's a waste of his time.
Yeah. I'm thinking that we're do it because that would be unseemly.
And Ballmer can't
seriously
do it.
Because that would be weird.
No, it would be.
But
weird.
I think there is, Mary Jo has talked in the past about her interview with Steve Ballmer, where he talked about how consumer and business are intertwined. And I think to a lot of us on the outside, we look at that and we say, well, yeah, sort of. I'm not really clear on how that works. I think that's where Satya Nadella needs help. Is understanding that theory, if you will, or that in practice, because that's a big part of Microsoft. And it's nothing, he has never worked on anything almost that bridges that gap.
Well,
you're laughing.
No, I'm not laughing. I'm just, yeah.
Oh, Paul, you're so cute.
No, I'm
thinking he is going to be as important for Satya Nadella as Bill Clinton was for Barack Obama. That when Satya says, Bill, where do they keep the sugar in the coffee bar? And he will call Bill. I'm being facetious, but it will be things like that. It will be
You don't think it's going to be big box things?
I think it will be things like very high level. What was the thinking behind? I mean, he was there for 22 years. He's seen it all. Right.
Yes.
So he doesn't have to ask about that stuff, but yes. I think he would very reasonably say, and partly this is politics, remember. Any board of directors, there's a lot of politics. I would guess the Microsoft board of directors is laden with politics. Part of it is that he can go to the board and say, well, I spoke with Bill, and we both agree, and Bill's sitting right there nodding.
Right. That will help him push things through.
Yeah.
I wonder if being CEO of Microsoft isn't a bit like being the president in the sense that you have these – high ideas and ideals going into the job.
Yeah.
And then you get there and you realize, in other words, you could look from the outside and say, oh, Windows 8's a mess and here's how we'd fix it. It's so simple. But then you get in there and they're like, okay, so here's the truth.
Yeah.
And then you find out what's really going on. and how these things all intertwine and everything.
I think that would be the case if it was Alan Mulally, but it's not the case for Nadella. He knows.
I don't know, but he's out. Does he?
Doesn't he?
I mean, Mary Jo might agree with this. I mean, when you hear from people from Microsoft, they tend to be insular to what they're working on, not out of choice, but because that's how the companies are organized.
Yeah.
You know, that they often don't know the details of what's happening.
And in the past, before they did the one Microsoft reorg, a lot of times they purposefully weren't telling each other what they were working on because there was rivalry between the teams and they're trying to fix that.
Right,
that's
true, yeah. Right.
But, you know, another reason I think this whole Gates thing happened, in addition to just the comfort level and people say it's Bill Gates, of course it's going to be a great thing that he's helping.
It's a public-facing thing.
It's a public-facing thing. And, you know, if the board had decided they needed to remove Gates as the chairman, you have to let the guy save face, right? And how do you have him save face? He saves face by being the technical advisor.
Does he really need to? I've only served on one board. It's a board of a nonprofit. Yeah. The only thing the chairman does is lead the meeting and enforce Robert's rules of order.
Yeah.
Is the role of chairman of the board at Microsoft that much more important than any individual board member? He only has one vote. He doesn't get two votes.
True.
Bill Gates probably doesn't need one.
That's interesting, actually.
It's honorary. He probably gets paid more, but is the role of chairman that much more significant than any other board member?
Probably not.
I think it's about having a gavel.
It is on the little board I serve on. It's important in the sense that you run the agenda, you know, so that can that can be meaningful. But you got Bill and Steve sitting in the room.
Right.
Gates
is de facto chairman. He founded the freaking company.
Yeah. By the way, it's worth noting that Nadella is also a board member. Three of the board members are present and previous CEOs of the company.
Wow, that's going to make it hard for those.
I don't know anything about other companies, really. That has to be unusual.
Something we all need to keep in mind too about the Microsoft board is there is going to be another member joining next month.
Yes.
Also playing into this whole thing. So if you're Steve and Bill and Satya and John Thompson, who all say they want Microsoft to stay intact and not sell off parts of the company, when the new board member from ValueAct, Morton Moffitt, joins.
Who he isn't pictured there, but looks a little bit like Satan.
Are they going to add a new seat? Because right now there's 10 people.
Yeah, they're going to add another seat.
Okay, so there'll be 11. And,
so if you're Microsoft and you want to push your agenda of one Microsoft and don't sell parts of the company off, what do? You stack the board deck in your favor, right? And so you put as many of the pro one Microsoft people on there as you can before this guy shows up.
So maybe there'll be other seats change. I mean, you look at the other people and it's pure formality. The former CFO at JP Morgan, president of Harvey Mudd College, the chairman of CEO
of Seagate. People Skype in while they're holding a drink with an umbrella in it.
The general partner at August Capital, former vice chairman at B of A, former chairman of the board of BMW.
I think Mary Jo is right. They're stacking the board so that they can prevent this guy from doing anything stupid.
Yeah.
That's that's
he only has one vote.
Says, but
yeah. No, that makes sense.
Right. So he also has a track record. I mean,
he's a jerk, I'm sure. even the name of his company.
He just walked his way into the Microsoft board of directors. Of course, he's a jerk. He's a world class jerk. That's amazing.
I shouldn't say things like that.
He's clearly a jerk. He would have to be a jerk. They're not like this guy seems nice. Let's just let him in.
They're activist investors.
Yeah. Right.
So, what's best
for the shareholder, right?
Which means quarterly results. Which means dividends.
Right, which means if you can get money by selling off Xbox, let's do it. Who cares what it means to the strategy long term?
Right.
Well, I not to defend that choice per se, but I will note that I think a lot of people hear things like we need to get rid of Bing, we need to get rid of Xbox, and they get scared because there's some kind of long-term investment or some deep integration pieces that supposedly exist. But, you know, spinning these businesses off doesn't mean they're separated forever and we can never do business with them again. I mean, there's all kinds of cross licensing that can occur.
And when we say split it off, it could still be you know, part of Microsoft, just a wholly owned subsidiary, kind of like how VMware is with EMC, right? It could be like that. Doesn't have
kind
to mean
like how Skype is with
Microsoft. I want to point out that they, as with many boards, Microsoft also has committees where only the independent board members, that is the non-Microsoft, not Ballmer, not Gates, not Nadella, members serve. There's the audit committee. Mm-hmm. That's chairman by Noski. The compensation committee, which determines what Nadella will get paid. The governance and nominating committee. I'm not sure. I think that's how they get new members on, probably. And how the board runs. And regulatory and public policy, which at Microsoft has to be a very large, important job. The former or current chairman of BMW, Dr. Penke, is the chair of that. But these committees are 3 or 4 member committees. They're not very big.
Is there like a House Ways and Means Committee?
Generally what happens, and again, I don't have a lot of experience with this. I've only served on a few boards. But generally what happens is the committees deliberate and then come back with a recommendation for the board. And on most things, the board, entire board will vote. Occasionally, there are some things that the committee has to
do. I'm sure they're usually very reasonable. And of course, what may happen with this new guy is some of those things may cease to be reasonable. So I guess we'll see.
He'll serve on a committee. I don't know which committee, or a committee or two. I guess most of them serve on two committees.
They're going to want to keep this guy busy. They should invent a few committees.
The Committee for the Lawn and Grounds.
Yes. Right.
The Committee for Fun and Games.
The restriping of the parking lots.
I'm on the prom committee.
Right, right. The annual getaway weekend committee.
I go to the meetings, but no one else ever shows, so I get to determine what the prom will be about this year. I just love this stuff. Now, the Wall Street Journal had an article on how the board chose Nadella. I don't know. You guys have probably read it by now. I don't know how accurate it is.
First and unanimous. That's all we need to say. Done.
We all agreed it's you.
Did we buy that? I mean, that seems...
I know. Yeah, John Thompson said that yesterday on one of those video interviews. He said, after we reviewed all the candidates, Satya was our first and unanimous choice on the board.
After everybody took themselves out of the run.
I was going to say, my initial reaction to that was like, really?
I know. Really? Yeah. I might add a word. I'd say after reviewing all the existing candidates or...
I would add the word technically.
Something like that.
Because this is probably the first time they actually voted officially, right? And that would be the point, technically this comment is probably true.
Yeah,
but it does, meets the letter.
John Thompson comes and says, look, this is a crappy choice. I mean, there's no good. I don't mean Satya is, but there's no perfect person. But we think we've come up with a way that we can help Mr. Nadella succeed, that we can keep the continuity, that we could provide something for Bill to do. And Mr. Ballmer will still, I don't know what Steve's role is.
As I described him on Twitter, that kid who graduates from high school and then hangs out after school every day for the next year. It's like,
we should give him something to do.
He's going to be the biggest independent shareholder. He should have a lot of say in what happens, I think.
Do you think, Mary Jo, because you talked to Steve, you had that great interview with him, and you talked to Satya right after you talked to Steve. So what insights do you have from that conversation? And we didn't know at the time that he was going to be the new CEO, although I presumed that that's why they did the dog and pony show. I mean, it's interesting that you got to interview him, isn't it?
It is.
Right after you interview Ballmer, you interview the next CEO just by complete coincidence.
Well, he wasn't allowed. This was in November, right? And he wasn't allowed to say anything about the CEO process or his candidacy or whatever. Like, that was the ground rule for me going in. It's like, you can ask him about Steve's legacy. You can talk to him about this and that. But no questions on the CEO thing. No even, like, wink, wink, hint, hint. None of that. So I didn't get any kind of sense from that meeting with him then. But I got to tell you, the conversation I had with Satya was very much him saying how much he had learned from Ballmer about how to be a manager, how to prioritize, how to think about strategy. He basically said, Steve taught me a lot of what I know, and I'm very much in his corner, and I think what he's done up to this point is right, and I'm backing the one Microsoft thing, and I don't think we should be selling off our assets. Yeah. So that was pretty clear at that point.
Maybe that was a campaign statement that, hey, if you vote for me, I'm the guy who's not going to break the company up.
Yep.
Here's the Wall Street Journal writing. They said, after the early pool of 100 potential candidates from a swath of industries, the board later drilled down on a narrower pool of candidates. By a board session on the weekend of December 14th, it's a month after you talked to them, but more than a month before they made the announcement, some board members were exhausted from the months of work and were concerned that the process had dragged on, said a person familiar with the matter. Mm-hmm. They left the meeting at a hotel less than 8 miles from Microsoft's headquarters without a pick. The board had more potential CEO candidates with whom they wanted to meet and were frustrated that research wasn't ready on at least one new prospect. As the directors considered possible executives, they launched into a debate on the governance of the $300 billion company. The notion of an executive chairman was born at this meeting as the board debated the different scenarios that might be needed to run Microsoft depending on which candidate was selected.
Yeah. So this suggests that Bill Gates as Grime or Worm Tongue or whatever his role is here was specific to Sachin and Nadella.
Right. That we could pick Nadella,
but they might have structured this differently for different people.
That's right. And I think you'd need even more of that if it were to say Alan Mulally, who had no experience inside Microsoft.
Yeah. And maybe that guy would have been Steve Ballmer since they know each other, you know, whatever.
Yep. Early on, directors realized there was no single person, this is again the Wall Street Journal, who embodied all the attributes they wanted. These people said, they're quoting their sources again, the choice would have to be a compromise. Yeah. This is exactly as you presume. The weaknesses of the imperfect CEO would have to be balanced with the strengths of other officials inside Microsoft. Mm-hmm. The directors had spoken to Nadella from the earliest stages. He emerged at this time as the leading internal contender. I think we knew that. That was obvious. There may be,
but he was clearly the best.
Tony
internal.
Bates, maybe.
It could have been someone else, but honestly, he was clearly the best choice internally, I would say.
The board met again January 19th.
Yeah, read that part because that's super interesting. It says they had four remaining internal and external candidates as of January 19th.
Wow.
That is not that long ago.
You wonder how many of those were internal because let's talk about who the internal candidates were besides Satya Nadella. Right. There was
Tony Bates, Stephen Elop,
and Kevin Turner. Kevin Turner, the COO, all were considered finalists, supposedly, or at least in the running throughout the process. I don't know if Kevin Turner made it into the finals or even if Elop did. I actually wrote something today saying, you know, if you look at what happened with Elop, remember when Microsoft bought Nokia, right away, everybody was saying, okay, Stephen Elop's going to be the next CEO. This is so obvious.
Don't you think that would have been a perception disaster?
Yeah, right? I don't think it would have been
right. I do think that he did as well as anyone could have done with Nokia, given where it was going. But the fact remains that this is a company that basically has been slowly spiraling a drain and needed to be bought out before it disappeared.
Yep.
And now we're going to let him run our company. You know, I mean, that would have, that is such a different perception than we have today. I mean, we don't know how this guy's going to do, but he certainly has that kind of smart, youthful engineer, youthful exuberance thing going on. Which gives off some nice positive vibes.
Yeah. According to the journal,
like Obama before the reality set in.
According to the journal, after this January 19th meeting, directors and Bill Gates wanted a consumer focus in a new CEO. After that 19th meeting, they appeared ready to select Mr. Nadella, even though he was mostly an enterprise background. They said, "Hey, Bing." Gates wanted a technical guy. I'm sorry, I misstated that. Gates said, in fact, he said this publicly in November, it should be, you got to have somebody comfortable leading a company stacked with technical people.
Yeah.
The directors also wanted a consumer focus. That's where the leading the R&D on Bing was valuable in both regards. They emerged from January 19th with an agreement to start contract negotiations with Mr. Nadella.
So, honestly, this guy's success is going to hinge on, in many ways, on his ability to manage people he can trust to do the right things in those various product groups, right?
Right.
Someone asked me earlier this week whether, you know, this in some ways was like a response to the Sinofsky stuff, you know, if this would prevent that kind of thing from happening again. And the truth is like, no, not really, because with Sinofsky, you had this situation where Ballmer trusted him to do the right thing. And that's how Windows 8 happened, you know, because he did such a great job with Windows 7. And so obviously this guy's the right steward for this and he's going to go forward and do a great job, but that doesn't always work out. And especially because he doesn't have as fine of a handle on the consumer stuff, you kind of have to trust that these people know what they're talking about and are doing the right thing. And I think maybe that's part of the Gates thing, that, you know, he can kind of stand over his shoulder and say, you know, no or yes or whatever. Whereas it's not clear that he, you know, understands those consumer type products well enough.
He meaning Gates there? Or Nadella.
Yeah.
Because you can make the case, how well does Gates understand the current landscape as well? Because he's been focused for the past 6 years on his foundation and really learning about health and public health and all these other fields that had nothing to do with technology. And I'm not saying he never read about what was going on or was privy to board discussions about it, but it's very different running the OS team at Microsoft versus coming to a board meeting five times a year and hearing what the OS team is doing, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you have to kind of ask how clued in is he about how very different the landscape is now with, you know, smartphones, with tablets, with Google, who wasn't a huge competitor to Microsoft 6 years ago. So a lot has changed, and he's going to have a lot of homework to do to get back up to speed, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you're worried that from now on we're going to hear a lot of cricket analogies during business discussions.
Okay.
Satya Nadella is also Pete Carroll's neighbor.
Yeah.
And really? Friend, apparently. Pete Carroll.
Ballmer's, you mean, right?
Did they say Ballmer or Nadella?
I think Ballmer.
Oh, you're right. Dang, I was going to give Satya some credit. Satya really, wouldn't that be good? Yeah. Pete Carroll, of course, the coach of the Seattle Seahawks. So they say, the journal says, Ballmer was watching the game. Same day the board approved the move for Mr. Gates and Mr. Nadella. Mr. Gates and Mr. Nadella both wanted the Microsoft founder to be the new CEO's technology advisor while remaining a board member, said people familiar with the matter. They felt Mr. Gates' involvement was critical due to, quote, Bill's iconic industry presence.
Right.
And I think that's really the role. It's almost a figurehead. I don't think you're going to expect Bill Gates to come in and say, you know, we really want to bring the desktop back, but let's not do a start menu. You're going to hear him, I think, support Nadella on the board and maybe even publicly. People look up to Bill Gates. I don't think he's going to have to do a lot of work.
I hope we don't get into some weird situation where Nadella sends people off with their marching orders and they kind of pause and then Gates nods and then they go.
Well, you know, that would be bad, obviously. Yeah. One of our chatters works for Deutsche Bank and he says, we have two CEOs. It's terrible. You never know which idiot to blame.
Yeah, it's like you're playing parents against each other.
Yeah. Companies with two CEOs. BlackBerry.
Bill said I could start this new business. I just need you to sign this form.
You know,
no, he said it was good.
you know, you have two kids. You know how that is.
How it works. Yeah,
splitting.
Yeah.
So, to which I always say, if your mother told you could do this, why are we having this conversation?
Yeah, there you go.
That's when I become suspicious.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now, another good question from the chat room here. From Web2874, Wither, Elop, and Bates, and other internal candidates, Turner. Is this a slap in the face? Are they going to stick around? Kicking the butt. Look at Nadella's, what, 48? He ain't going anywhere for a while.
Well, no CEO job is permanent.
Well, that's true. Yeah, good point.
No, but you know, one thing I have heard about all three of those internal candidates, Elop, Turner, and Bates, is all of them really want to be a CEO. And they all were CEOs before.
Where was Turner CEO?
He was CEO of Sam's Club.
Wow.
Yep.
Bates, of course, Microsoft. Skype. He came in with the Skype acquisition at Elop and Nokia. Yep. They've all been CEOs, and they all were.
And they all want to be CEOs again. So
there you go.
If you got turned down, you're probably thinking, should I look for a CEO job elsewhere? Because Satya isn't going anywhere for a while, and I'm going to just be sitting here.
Yeah. All of this is in the calculations. No wonder the board was exhausted. According to the journal, Thompson immediately went to Cabo San Lucas. He and his wife took off. And on January 23rd, they said, and his wife was, Mr. Thompson said he didn't anticipate leading the CEO search would be a full-time job. And Mr. Thompson's wife complained.
If I wanted to work, I wouldn't be on a board of directors for crying out loud.
And Mr. Thompson's wife complained how much time her husband was spending on the phone.
Wow. It's going to be tough.
6 months of that.
Yeah, not an easy job.
Oh. And right there, you just saw one of the big things. Well, what happens now to the people we say no to?
That's interesting, actually.
Yeah, all of this has to be considered.
Yep. The problem is these guys, anyone you just mentioned, they're not going to become the CEO of a company that's even a tiny percentage the size of Microsoft.
Right. Which is better, to be an executive vice president or a president of a division of Microsoft or a CEO at a smaller company?
I can't say. I don't have that kind of ambition, but.
Yeah, Paul and I are in our jammies.
I'm literally not wearing pants.
We're grown men who spend our time podcasting, so probably the wrong people to ask here.
Yeah. Right. Sorry, Mary Jo.
Yeah.
I'm glad you didn't say I was in my jammies. I am not.
No, Mary Jo is wearing a business suit. Definitely. She is ready to take on the world, and boy, Microsoft, you missed a bet.
It's fair to say that when I go to sleep tonight, I'll be wearing these exact clothes. But let's move.
Don't call them jammies. Call them loungewear.
Right.
It's just loungewear. All right. Let's take a break. Lots more to talk about, obviously. And it would really a number of people tweeted, I can't wait to hear what Paul and Mary Jo have to say about this. So in a way, you know, we got Paul on immediately on TNT. However, in a way, I wanted to also let it stew for a day because sometimes the immediate thoughts change over time as you think a little bit more about the subject. So,
yes, for sure.
This is a perfect time to talk about it. We will continue, including what should Nadella do? What WWSD? What would Satya do? Mm-hmm. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. Those great folks at IT Pro TV want to help you improve your skills, get a better job, get those certs to get in the biz, or if you're already in the biz, get the knowledge. You don't need the certs, but you might want the knowledge to be a better IT professional. Visit itpro.tv/ww, and you can see what it's all about. I'm actually very honored by what the folks at IT Pro TV are up to. They were, you know, for a long time, these guys have been training people in this subject matter. But they've watched the screensavers for years. They attended here's their video on the front page. They attended an NAB talk.
Hi, welcome to IT Pro TV, another great channel on the Edutainment Live network. I'm Don Pezette, and I'm accompanied today by Tim, one of our other founders here. I say other founders, like there's a bunch of them, but it's just you and me.
Don and Tim are great. They remind me a lot of Patrick and me on the screensavers. And if you look at the set, it looks just like it. They came to an NAB panel that I ran, and they got inspired. They said, you know, we could probably do something a little more than we're doing. And they launched IT Pro TV using much of the same technology we use here at Twit, the TriCaster, the Heil mics. Their set looks so much like the screensavers set. They broadcast live as well as offer downloads, which is really great because you can run. And by the way, it works on Roku, of course, as well as your computer and your tablet and your mobile devices.
And from here, I can run all kinds of really cool commands. The one we can use to find out what version of Windows we're using is WinVer. So we just type in WINVER, all one word, and hit enter, and that should pull up.
So they're in there. They're on right now. They're live right now. In fact, there's a live chat room that you could participate in as well, which really is great. You can also go back through the episode library. If you take a look at the episode library, you see they have videos, hundreds of videos, in three very important cert categories, the CompTIA stuff, A+, NetPlus, SecurityPlus, the MCSA videos for Microsoft certs, and Cisco certs. So what you're really getting is equivalent of a huge library of study materials, and the price is right. Now, normally it's $57 a month for everything, full access, including live and downloads. That's $570 when you buy the year-long plan. You save considerably. But we got a great offer since they are fans of Twit. And Don and Tim were here, by the way. They came in the studio. It was great to meet them. They have offered us 50% off because you're watching Windows Weekly. So here's the deal. If you go to itpro.tv/ww, you can take a tour of the site, learn all about it, and then use the code WW50. It'll only be $28.50 a month, $285 for an entire year, so much less than going to a school to do this or even buying study materials. And it's not just for the first month or year, it's forever. So please take advantage of this now. itpro.tv/ww. Use the offer code WW50. Of course, easy cancellation, no problem. Really great guys. I'm a big fan of IT Pro TV. You're watching Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott is here. Mary Jo Foley. Paul, are you okay?
Yes. Sorry.
No, that's fine. I was a little worried. I don't have control of the audio.
I didn't have a stroke or anything.
We are talking, obviously, about the big Microsoft story. The new CEO. Immediately, Twitter goes crazy. The blogosphere goes crazy. What should Satya do? He's in charge now. Took office immediately, presumably doing a lot of all-hands meetings right now. I don't know what he's up to, but what do you think? What the wisdom of many years Microsoft? You've been watching Microsoft longer than he's been at Microsoft.
Right. What say you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so are you saying what would be our advice for Satya?
Yeah.
So here's my advice, and this is going to sound a little weird, I think. I've interviewed Satya a number of times in his different jobs at Microsoft.
To his credit, he's been very accessible, hasn't he?
He has been pretty accessible, yeah. And I got to say, in the old days when I used to interview him, he really kind of let his geek flag fly.
Good.
I mean, he was so techie. Like, the interviews, you'd walk away and just go, whoa, like, wow.
Great. You know? I love that.
And now I feel like they've made him go too high level and use too many tech buzzwords and not be as geeky as he used to be. So I say my advice would be, Satya, be the tech visionary that you are and don't get all caught up in the management bingo buzz speak. That'd be my advice.
Now, he is a cloud guy. Microsoft's in this kind of transition, not only from desktop computing, to tablet computing, but from desktop software to SaaS and to cloud computing. He's the right guy, it seems to me, to make that transition. Mm-hmm. Any advice there? You say play to Microsoft's strengths, software.
Yeah. That was kind of interesting yesterday. One of the first things he did on his day one was he had an all-hands meeting. First, he had an all-hands for employees. Then he had an all hands for a group of invited partners and customers who they brought to campus, and they were there and got to have a meet and greet with him. And he gave a very short presentation that was webcast. And you know what I found interesting? He talked about software a lot. And that is a little bit different because Microsoft's been talking so much about devices and services. We're a devices and services company, and they've been kind of distancing themselves from being called a software company. And he kept, I don't know how many times he said it yesterday, but he said it numerous times in 15 minutes. You know, this is all about software, our strength is software. What's different about us is what we know about software. And I don't know exactly why they had him say this, but there is definitely a reason they had him say the word software so much.
Well, and maybe it's not a they, maybe it's him. Maybe it's him saying, this is my agenda.
No. You know, all those speeches, they have to run through gamuts of approval, right?
Really? He's the CEO. Yeah.
Still have to.
Really? Who?
I think.
Who's going to say, Satya, I know you're the CEO, but you can't say that.
He has handlers like everybody, and they probably have him vet the talk before he gives it.
Oh, that's depressing.
Yeah, I think. Don't you think? I think it's the same for presidents. I think it's the same for everybody. They run through the talk and people listen to it and go, yeah, don't say that. Or, yeah, say that.
He said, software will define devices. Software empowers everyone. Software embedded in our devices and services. He says, you say Microsoft may be repositioning itself as a devices and services company, but first and foremost, he says it's a software company.
Yeah. I think it's, I don't quite know what to make of it yet, but it really struck me yesterday that, he's trying to make a point. I just don't know what the point is.
Well, it's what you would do, though. I don't know. I mean, if you're the president, your inaugural address is to set the agenda. And then you have the yearly State of the Union to set the agenda. You say, this is my agenda. This is what I think is important. Do you not think that? Do you not think that's what he's doing?
I don't think this was his inaugural address yesterday.
Okay.
Because he didn't really talk about, like, here's what I plan to do in devices. Here's what I'd like to see us do in services. Right. He didn't go like that.
I actually think that this was smart because I'm sure if you were to go back a year and a half ago, whenever they made this big devices and services announcement, that we talked about it on the podcast. And what we said was, you know, it's really odd for a company that basically makes all of its money selling software that they somehow have arrived at a term that doesn't even have the word software in it. It's crazy. And I think this was his way of positioning software as the basis for devices and services. In other words, what he's talking about is software that runs on devices and software that's delivered as a service. It's software. And this is maybe the message that should have been said originally when they had this little strategy name come up. And the thing that Microsoft customers, fans, whoever need to hear, because people have been freaking out.
Yes.
That this company that was so good at this thing has been disavowing it for the past year and a half.
Well, not the least of which shareholders who say you took a $900 million write-off for Surface.
Yeah, I know, really.
Hardware hasn't been a real success for Microsoft.
No.
So really maybe doesn't. The mission statement, you know, at the website it says services and devices, right? Maybe it should say we make the software that powers,
yes, that the powers services, the devices and the services that you use. Exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm. Exactly right. And yeah. I know that it came out of this bid to be simple, you know, that you want to say it in the simplest way. And the simplest way was devices and services, or services and devices, however it said. But again, you know, when you talk about Microsoft, it's the software giant. It's the software company. It's the, you know, it's the maker of software. That's it's software. That's Microsoft.
Yeah. What do you think? Who cares what I think? What do you think? Is that the right way to state it?
I like it.
Yeah. I like it too.
I like the way you said it. I like Mary Jo said, he's sending a message.
Yeah.
And I like the message because the message is not, it's not an about face. It's not a 90 degree or 180 degree turn. It is just a restating of the thing that they're doing in a way that makes more sense to the people that care about the company.
Hey, by the way, let's not forget Amy Hood in all of this. this, right. Well, I keep seeing, okay, you tell me, but I keep seeing articles saying, hey, Amy Hood's important. She's the CFO, the new CFO. One analyst said, it's a team. It's Nadella and Hood. That the way Hood's kept costs down has realigned the business and set expectations. This is Ramo Lenskow. We believe the combination of Mr. Nadella and Ms. Hood could be a recipe for successfully managing Microsoft's transition to devices and services. That's an analyst. Remember, analysts have different constituencies. You know, they're not.
Well, what's the suggestion that somehow Nadella's ascension to CEO is a boon to this woman who was not already fairly prominent? I mean, honestly, Amy Hood has kind of come into her own, I would say. She's a big part of that financial analyst meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's more she's a good compliment to him that, you know, people on Wall Street who might be afraid of him because he's such a techie and not a management guy, she will be the one to kind of hold their hands and make them feel good about it.
We will run a tight ship. This isn't Satya's job. I'm here.
Right.
She's the Tim Cook, in effect, the person who manages operations, manages production, makes sure the stuff gets done. And if you are a devices company, that's a more important role than a software company. That's a pretty important role.
It is.
I mean, I hope this isn't inappropriate to mention, but I think there's an interesting story to be said for diversity here as well. I mean, she is a woman, and he is an Indian American now running one of the world's biggest companies.
Boy, they're happy about that in Hyderabad, by the way.
That's a happy circumstance, and I'm sure that wasn't the point, but it is still notable.
Absolutely. No, I think it's great. And the chairman of the board is an African American.
Yeah.
Bravo.
That's a trifecta.
Mm-hmm. You know,
it's like the diversity trifecta.
It's
great to see because it's very different from the Microsoft of not too long ago.
That's for sure. You mean the middle-aged white man's club?
Yeah, well, Bill Gates college buddies club.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Really?
I mean, that's Microsoft. I mean, that's what it's been.
Yeah.
So that's a wonderful change right there.
Yep. Now, wither windows. Right, windows.
Not wither on the vine. Not that.
Well,
kind of
W-H-I.
Although
it might be wither. I don't know.
I know.
What happens to windows?
Well, I we don't know.
We didn't dig in on that question.
We don't see the future, Leo. But I think the future for Microsoft is going to involve obviously trying to fix Windows as they can.
You say in your article, to grow, Microsoft must de-emphasize Windows.
Right. And what I mean by that is, historically, Microsoft has tied its other platforms to Windows. Office being the most obvious example that everyone could understand. But there are little examples of that, too, by the way. In fact, looking at my software pick of the week, which involves some Bing app stuff, still something that only runs in Windows. Those are both examples of software products that Microsoft makes, big and small, that should run everywhere, regardless of where you are. They should run as web apps. They should run as mobile apps on the most popular platforms. They should run on the Mac. You know, these are things that need to be everywhere. The Microsoft of old, it's weird. We get caught up in these traditions that aren't necessarily all that old, but the original vision for Microsoft in many ways was that's what they would do, right? They started off making developer tools, but then it was application software, and they targeted the popular platforms, whatever they were. Windows became this kind of a cyclone that sucked everything up into it. And as the world changes, Windows isn't necessarily the focus of personal computing anymore.
Right.
And increasingly, it's these mobile devices, and increasingly, that means it's Android and, to a lesser extent, iOS. And, the argument here, and it's, I'm not the only one saying it, but, I mean, the argument here is that Microsoft needs to put the focus where the people are, even if it
means the customers are.
Yeah. And so there was a, I don't remember what it was, there was a Bing release this past week, a mobile app release from Bing that I think targeted Android and iOS, and I got some angry emails from people saying, oh, there's Microsoft, Windows phone's coming soon. They're doing iOS and Android first, Yeah. I mean, I agree with you as a Windows phone user. I would prefer to see it on Windows phone first, but, you have to, there's a business to be run here. I mean, you have to target where the people are. And I think that's just the reality of it. That in the mobile world, I should say in the smartphone world, 96% of those people are running Android and iOS. So that's your reality.
Wow. Yeah. But that's software. Software handles all of that. You point out in your article that Mason Mordor, the Value Act board member.
I love this. Mordor. That Sauron Mordor.
The Sauron guy. Has already said, he's already told Bloomberg that he wants Microsoft to de-emphasize Windows. I mean, I don't know what that means.
Well, allegedly. But I mean, I think there's some call to that. I think there's some good rationale there.
Office still important?
Yeah, it's not so much that he supposedly is looking for them to de-emphasize Windows as it is not favor Windows in every decision. So he is supposedly looking for them to decouple Office and Windows and bring Office out on other platforms like the iPad, which, by the way, they're already on the road to doing.
Yes. But, recall, I think Steve Ballmer said it last year sometime, the plan is after it's on Windows. And it's like,
Right.
Honestly, there are two things at stake here. One is simply like what I said earlier, just addressing this is where the customers are. The other one, though, that's important for Office, I think, is that the longer you ignore these platforms, the least viable offices going forward, because after a while, people just use other things. And if the all the people using the most popular platforms have moved past Office, you've got a whole other set of problems. Yeah. It's actually even worse than the Windows thing.
You know, I kind of I'm reading this article from Bloomberg about, that talks about Morfitt, and one of the things Morfitt said is we found over time, this is in a lecture series at Stanford, but we found over time the most effective way to get what you want accomplished is behind the scenes, that is on the board probably. For us, it's just a truism. People will do what you want if they like you and if you haven't publicly humiliated them. He says he's going to use data and persuasion, not saber rattling.
This has never worked for me. So I wish him well.
Well, but I think that's his role on the board, that's not a bad – that's great. That's valuable. Even if they don't do what he says, if he brings in data and says, here's a cogent argument for this.
That's his description of him. What do other people say about it? Okay, I mean, I of course he's going to position what he's doing as something like he's like White Knight. I mean, that's what the guy, you know, who's, you know, pulling the knife out of your back and cleaning it on your shirt is saying. I mean, what do other people say about this guy?
We'll find out.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I suspect it's not very popular, positive.
Well, you know, never when you're an activist investor and you kind of force your way into boards, of course, never seen as a positive.
Yeah. Not from the perspective of that company.
But
you know.
Yeah, but it isn't bad to, I mean, this board is kind of a lame board. Let's face it. It's not bad to get, I mean, really, who runs the board? It's going to be Gates. It's going to be Ballmer. It's going to be Nadella and maybe a little John Thompson. And the rest of them are going to go, hmm. So it's not a bad thing to get somebody, if he's smart and brings data, to argue, you know, kind of alternative points of view, even if they don't do it.
Yeah, I think it is. It's not, we can't say for sure he's going to be a negative disruptor, right? I mean, because if you look at all these articles, he's never actually said anything except just in speeches. He's never said, I want Microsoft to sell Bing. He has never said
that's
that.
That's right. Unlike Carl Icahn, who is very outspoken about what he wants his investments to do.
And, you know, what he, I think, is going to bring to the board, I'm trying to be an optimist about it, is a short-term perspective. Because the people who are on Microsoft's board have a long-term perspective. Like, they don't mind waiting 10 years to see if something they're investing in is going to actually pan out.
Right.
He's going to be more, hey, guys, we're not going to wait around 10 years to see if what we're doing here in tablets is a good idea.
Right. All right. It's such a leaky board that I'm convinced that if he's a pain in the ass, we'll know soon.
Yeah, I know.
So too.
I mean, it's pretty obviously leaky.
Yes.
I think we are agreeing software is a good focus for Microsoft. That we all are. Let's have a vote. yes. I move that it's a good idea to get Office everywhere, including iOS.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And one of the things
sooner rather than later.
One of the things that's historically hurt Microsoft is internecine warfare between divisions. The Office divisions or the Windows division saying over our dead body.
By the way, if Microsoft had been split up by the U.S. government in the early 2000s, one of the businesses that would have come out of that would have been Office. Mm-hmm. And they would have targeted these platforms.
Immediately.
Yes.
Of course.
Well, certainly before now.
From the point of view of the Office group, it increases revenues. From the point of view of the RT and Surface group, bad idea.
Yeah.
And that's what a good leader like Nadella could do, is come in and say, look, I know, but we have a corporate, overarching corporate strategy. I've been reading a lot about Amazon. I'm reading that Bezos book. The Everything Store. I've been reading a lot about companies, Apple. If you're going to continue to grow as a company, you've got to cannibalize existing businesses. Apple said, we know the iPhone is going to cannibalize the iPod. Okay.
Yeah. And by the way, even Microsoft used to do this. Remember the decisions to let, you know, AOL on the Windows desktop and, this is something they used to do. Back when they
were competitive.
back when they were young.
When they wanted to win.
Yeah.
But that's what a CEO should do, is say, look, this is an overarching goal for the corporation. Individual divisions do not get to choose.
Right.
Here's the marching orders. Do it.
In other words, the theory should be like, look, if you want to beat iOS, that's great. Please, Windows, do everything you can to beat iOS.
It ain't gonna be by,
we're going to be porting Office to iOS. Right.
There you go. That's the way to put it. You know? We're not giving you.
We're not going to stop you from doing it.
Right.
But we're also not going to give you artificial leverage.
Right.
And damage our, by the way, most important business.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that's a kind of a pragmatic thing they need to come to.
Am I right in assuming that that's been traditionally a problem for Microsoft, at least in the last few years, a problem?
It has been in the past, for sure.
Yeah.
Mary Jo was talking about the internecine kind of warfare that occurred internally with the guns pointing at each other. Yeah. And that's where that comes from.
Yeah.
Good. I mean, remember the whole original Microsoft tablet vision? The reason it got scuttled was because it didn't run Office. I mean, these days, that obviously, well, this didn't happen.
And Jay Allard throws up his hands and says, well, screw you, and leaves.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a balancing act, though, right? Because if you're the CEO, you have to look at all the data and say, which is going to hurt us more, doing X or doing Y in terms of finance, right? And in terms of strategy, you have a lot of different things to weigh. Is it going to hurt us more to put Office on iPad before we put it on Surface, you know, or is it going to help us in terms of revenues and strategy?
Right. And not to overgeneralize, but I would say that not doing stuff hurts you most in the long run. And, you know, that's kind of what's happening.
It's sometimes the hardest thing for business to do, but you have to cannibalize
your
existing business to grow.
Yep.
And that's otherwise, you're
Windows
stagnant.
Is tough because, you know, Windows is Microsoft to many people. And they not only could they not cannibalize it, they stopped other products. They renamed products to Windows something just to get that little sniff of success onto it or whatever. It's just so awful.
Yeah. Well, it's good. Too bad. Maybe. I mean, what better time to change that than with a new CEO? Yeah.
Right.
With the support of Mr. Gates as technical advisor. I mean, I think that's the role of Bill Gates. No. Listen to Satya. He knows what he's got. My full support.
No, he's going to be playing Stratego on his smartphone and just kind of waving.
Bill doesn't sound like that, really. Well, sort of.
He does. He's got that kind of Bill.
Windows 8.1 update 1 update. Update 4 coming. We'll talk about that in just a bit.
Yep.
More updates about the update. But first, a word from ShareFile, a great product. I think we have not told people about ShareFile on the show before, and we really should. Sure, you have other choices, even a choice from Microsoft to share files. Here's why you want to look at ShareFile. First of all, it's completely cross-platform, completely easy to use. It does not require an account on the part of the person receiving the file. The last thing you want to do is attach an email. And most business emails today, contain attachments, documents, spreadsheets, PowerPoint presentations, contracts. That's not the way to do it. It's not secure. You're going to have a real problem as these files get big with bounce back. A lot of inboxes can't handle these massive files. ShareFile can. They also don't have the thing you need, the security. ShareFile from Citrix sends your attachments as secure links. You can send files of almost any size with the highest degree of security. You'll get a notification when the file's been opened and by whom. You can control access. You could say how long they can download it, how many times. And ShareFile, there's a great Outlook plugin with ShareFile that makes it look like email. It's just not. I use ShareFile. I used to use a variety of sharing programs, and I went to ShareFile and was so happy because it just simplified my life considerably. I'll show you. I could show you my ShareFile account. Oh, yeah, let's not take the time. But basically what happens is they get a link, they click the link, they don't have to sign up for ShareFile. Your branding is on the page. We have our Twit logo on it. It's, you know, it just explains clearly what is to do. You click that link, it downloads, it unzips. If it's a folder, it'll zip it up. It's just great. I want you to try it free for 30 days. Or bring it to your business. Bring it to your IT guy. Say, let's look at this. HIPAA compliant. If you're in the medical field, it's compliant with regulations from a variety of industries. In fact, if you start your free trial, they'll ask you what industry, and you can customize it for that industry. Now, I'm going to invite you to try it free for 30 days and use the offer code Windows. But to do that, you can't click that big green button in the middle. You can't click the little green button at the menu bar. You have to go up to the little tiny text at the top of the page where it says podcast listeners. Click here. Click there. And then I want you to enter the offer code Windows. No, I don't need to chat with you right now. Windows, and you will be giving us a little credit and getting 30 days free. Do select your industry because it supports regulation in a variety of industries, legal, medical, healthcare, manufacturing, marketing, nonprofits, real estate, and so forth. If you're a real estate agent, you got to know about ShareFile. ShareFile.com. Please use the offer code Windows after clicking that link at the top of the page. ShareFile.com. I'm Leo Laporte, Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley are here. We're talking about Microsoft and Windows, as we do each and every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. Moving on from the Microsoft.
Did we talk about Scott Goo?
So, no, let's.
We should talk
Let's talk about Scott Guthrie, you're talking about?
Yeah.
They call him Scott Goo.
This was a big deal. We call him Scott Goo.
Because
the red shirted one.
The red shirt. He is now taking Satya's old job, basically.
He is, yep. And this to me, was a pretty surprising choice. Surprising in a good way, not a bad way.
Just to step back for a second, though, because everyone wanted, you know, one of the big questions when Nadella was announced was, okay, but who's taking his old job?
Right.
Microsoft had no comment on that.
They didn't say?
No. So everyone was wondering this. But I don't know, Mary Jo, I think basically was... You know, like those little dogs that kind of grab onto your ankle and they don't let go?
It was super annoying.
Who is it? Who is it? Who is it?
So she found out.
Yeah.
Why did they not announce it? I mean, didn't they know that?
Maybe they didn't want to take the spotlight away. Or
exactly.
Yeah, but that's the obvious question.
It is. But you want all eyes on Satya. And Scott Goo is, at Microsoft, one of the biggest rock stars. I mean, the guy, like when he goes to build, people follow him around to get his autograph. I'm not kidding. He comes out wearing the red polo shirt and people go crazy.
Now, how did that, did he just wear that one time? For some reason, he was like the only guy with the red shirt and then it became a thing, I think. Is that what happened?
Well, he says that the reason he wears red shirts now is because he doesn't want to have to think about his wardrobe. So he has millions of red polo shirts and every day he just puts on the red shirt so he doesn't have to waste time thinking about it.
Great trademark.
I do as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
He wore a blue shirt one time. Do you remember that, Paul?
You know, but and Paul, like, coffee stained is not a color, just so you know.
It becomes a color.
Right. You got to pick your colors well.
That's why it's dark.
By the way, this is interim. I don't know how interim is.
Yeah. Not so interim, really. I think it's just a formality that it's interim.
Okay. And why is he so beloved? Is he a developer? Is he...
He's a developer, and he is a developer's developer, right? He is a true developer, gets all into things like open source tools and what you can do. And he was originally the champion of Silverlight before Microsoft kind of nixed it, Silverlight.
Oh, that's then where I know his name.
Yep.
Yep.
Then he moved over to Azure to be the head of program management on Azure a couple of years ago. And as soon as he came into that role on Azure, so many things started happening. Like they started really cranking up the pace of rollouts and getting in with open source companies, getting them committing to Azure, doing things that developers wanted that weren't typical Microsoft things, like open sourcing certain kinds of tools or projects. So he just does what's right for developers, and that's earned him a lot of loyalty.
Awesome. I like that kind of guy.
He's a good guy and super technical. Man, he's like techie to the nth degree. So they're bringing the engineers on right now at Microsoft.
That's a good sign, I think.
It is a good sign.
Do you think Nadella would have a lot of say about who his successor is?
Yeah, I would think.
So you could read a little into that, too, as to direction.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Scott Goo. He's got a nickname. He's got a trademark. That's my kind of guy. Does he talk to journalists?
Yes, he talks to the journalists.
Love him.
Yep.
All right.
Yep. All good. All goodness on the Scott Goo thing. We don't know who's taking Scott Goo's place yet on Azure, but
it's turtles all the way.
I know. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Somebody not gooey. Good.
Yeah, so great we just news. Have to talk about him because that was a kind of a nice surprise ending of a long day yesterday to hear it was him. Yeah.
Okay, great. Now Windows 8.1 update 1.
Yeah.
What's new? What's
seems
in? What's
so boring
not?
Now? You know,
I know. CEO search is like hot, spicy food.
I know, gossip.
I know, and this is like the intermezzo. You know, it's like it's not even dessert. So, let's see. I guess I'll just talk about the actual build and what's happening there. Is that
sure.
That's okay?
Yeah, do it, man.
We know.
It's so, out, right? It leaked out. I saw it leaked out this week.
Yeah, a build leaked, and so we actually got our hands on it. And it's interesting to look at and to see what's going on there. And I think the most accurate thing to say about it is that there's nothing, you know, big major thing. It's kind of like Windows 8.1 plus in the sense that the major themes of Windows 8.1, which are to make the operating system better for both people on tablets and people on traditional computers, are further explored or further expanded. And so there's the stuff we knew about, like the search button and the start, the power options button that are on the start screen. The when you right click now on the start screen or the app screen, you get the menu like you would on the desktop.
Ooh,
which is kind of nice. The ability, actually, it's funny. There's a little bit of subtlety to this, but there are two features related to Metro apps on the desktop's taskbar. The first one is that you can pin a Metro app to the taskbar so that it's always there. So that if you work primarily in the desktop environment, but occasionally want to run a Metro app, you can do that.
And did I see thumbnails on it too?
Well, so yes, if it's running, you get the thumbnail, which is not a big deal. Although there's an interesting side effect to that I'll get to in a moment. I didn't write about this, but it's kind of interesting. The second one is you can also show any running Metro apps in the taskbar, which is a separate feature. And what that means is if you've got like three Metro apps and three desktop apps running, they'll all have buttons in the taskbar. And so you can switch to them more easily. And that's when the preview comes up, the little thumbnail preview. And the interesting side effect of that is Metro apps are actually managed by the operating system. So they go into this kind of a, I don't know what the technical term for it is, like a tombstoned kind of a state where they're still in memory, but they're not, they're kind of on the way out. And you can actually see that in the thumbnail because sometimes you'll see the thumbnail of the app, but sometimes all you'll see is a thumbnail of the start screen of the app, like the animation that loads.
Oh.
And I believe that that's for an app that's kind of on the way out, you know, that eventually it will come out of memory.
Oh,
it's slowly fading to that, to that distant horizon. And then there's this, but you know, again, actually there's one other feature that I maybe is worth mentioning is this kind of a toolbar that appears or I guess we call it a toolbar or an app bar or something at the top, again, with the mouse. So you're using a Metro app or the PC settings app, and you move the mouse to the top, a black bar comes across the top with the name of the app, the little icon in the corner, and then minimize and close buttons so that with the mouse, you can close those apps, which wasn't possible without dragging and dropping.
That's good. And are they still full screen only, or do they have windowed Metro apps? Still full screen only. Yeah. Let's not go crazy.
The other welcomes, maybe addition for virtually everyone, is that in 8.1, they removed the... like the SkyDrive taskbar button, the tray icon. And a lot of people have complained, you know, it's hard to know when it's doing stuff or if it's syncing or if everything's synced properly. And they're putting that back. And so it doesn't look like it's complete, but that's making a comeback as well. So just a bunch of little things. And there's a lot of other little things. And they're all little. There's nothing that I would describe as super major in there. But, you know... I think these kinds of fit and finish improvements are important, and I think they add up. And I think Windows 8.1 could benefit from two or three more of these things this year. I would love to see that happen. But I think this is shaping up to be kind of a nice little feature pack, basically.
In a way, Update 1 seems to be as big a deal as 8.1 alone. Yeah.
Almost, yeah. almost.
Especially with the way it's handling Metro. I mean, that's a big deal.
If they got 8.1, if they got update 1 or whatever update to the point where Metro apps were running as Windows, I would say, yeah, they could call that, you know, 8.2 almost.
Yeah,
I mean,
almost,
I think that,
yeah,
that would be big, yeah.
Enterprise mode for IE.
Yeah, this is one of those features that's going to be in 8.1 update 1 that is something enterprise users might be very interested in. So, you know, when you're on XP and you're kind of stuck with IE6, and a lot of people coded apps and intranet sites to IE6. Well, people have done that with IE8 now. And the problem is some software, including some of Microsoft's services and software, like Office 365 and Office 2013, don't work with IE8. They discontinued that browser support. So if, say, you're an enterprise, say you want to go to IE11 on either Windows 7 or Windows 8.1, you can't if you need IE8 in your shop. So Microsoft knows this has been a problem, and they're taking this idea of the compatibility mode in Internet Explorer a step further, and they're adding this in as a feature supposedly called Internet Explorer Enterprise Mode, ME. I think they call it ME. Enterprise Mode IE. Yep. And the idea is you'll be able to...
EM, not ME.
EMIE, I think.
Don't say ME.
Why?
Well, Windows ME, I think, is the first
thing. Oh, geez, I didn't even think of that.
That would be one reason.
No.
Millennium Edition, anybody?
No. Yeah, so you're going to be able, as a company, to say, hey, I have these intranet sites. I need them to display in IE8 for those sites, but for everything else, I want it to display in IE11. And that supposedly is how this is going to work. It's something I've heard you can do now with group policy settings if you know how to do that or care to do it that way. But they're going to actually make this a feature of the browser that's built into Windows 8.1 update 1, supposedly. So that's good. Another kind of cool feature that gets added to update 1.
Windows ME. It's back.
Windows ME. No. I didn't even think of that when you said that, Leo. I was like, oh, why?
You've buried it deep in your subconscious. That's why.
Internet Explorer Millennium Edition.
I know. IEME.
Something you try to block from memory.
It's IEEM. Now, I buried the lead because you have a little scooplet here.
Yeah,
on
this isn't a huge deal, I don't think, but...
I disagree.
Okay.
I think it is a huge
originally
deal.
The game plan was to get update 1 out on March 11th, which is Patch Tuesday. I had heard that from my sources, and that was called a ship target, right? It wasn't like a set in stone, like that's it, it's going to be out on Windows update on that date, boom. It was kind of like, yeah, we think that we can hit that target. And now in the past week, I've heard from two different sources that no, they've decided not to try to hit that target. Mm. And instead, they're going to go for the Patch Tuesday in April to distribute update 1. So that would be April 8th. So instead of March 11th,
the following
April
8th. All right.
So I'm not one of these people who are saying, oh, they slipped and something must be wrong. I'm not willing to go there because the original way I heard the news about March was it was a target. It wasn't like... it's on the calendar and we got to hit that date.
Well, and by the way, Microsoft has never once acknowledged this release either.
No, so, it never even said publicly this exists. Yeah. Right. So
let alone what day.
I mean, to be fair. So
I know. Right. So it's hard to say like, yeah, they slipped. They haven't even said this exists.
Microsoft has missed the schedule that we reported.
the rumor schedule.
There you go. Yeah. But anyway, it's that date, April 8th is after Microsoft Build, so we'll probably hear more about update 1 at Build, I would think, if that's still their target. And OEMs, we should say, OEMs who are going to preload update 1 on new PCs, they're still supposedly getting the code in March.
Yeah.
So it doesn't sound like it really slipped per se, but more just a decision on how they get it out from a servicing perspective.
I mean, it's pretty clear they want it to be part of Windows Update. I mean, that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
So you can only be the second Tuesday of a month. So if it's going to be later in March, well, you got to do it in April.
Yeah, it's right. In other words, they're not going to slipstream it in some other date.
Right.
For whatever reason, they would never do
that. Is the version?
Maybe,
Go ahead.
Titanfall was supposed to be March 11th, wasn't
it?
Oh,
you don't want to step on Titanfall.
It is March 11th.
So maybe they also thought about that. I don't know. I'm just guessing on that one.
I can't imagine that's related to that. But
yeah. Oh, that Titanfall division is very powerful. You don't want to mess with them.
No. No. I think Titanfall is not made by Microsoft. Oh,
okay.
Though it's,
okay. The Xbox still, One
you
division.
Don't wanna, you don't want to mix your messages.
Okay. Okay.
So there you go.
Paul, the leaked version that you guys were playing with, and by you guys, I mean Raphael.
yes.
Does that seem fairly stable? Is it fairly done? Is it cooked?
Yeah. I mean, I you know, people have already asked me, you know, should I install this?
No, don't. What are you, crazy?
No, that's crazy talk. But no, this is a fairly minor update. So, yeah, I mean, I've only had it for a couple of days. I wouldn't claim that it's anything other than it, what it is. But it's, yeah, it's fine.
I'm curious how, you know, there was rumor that Microsoft was going to make boot to desktop the default on this release.
The default.
Which,
that was the dumbest.
Yeah. Never happened.
Thing
never.
I've ever heard.
Right. I think it was a bad headline.
Yes.
Actually, that made that.
It wasn't even a story. It was the bad headline.
I kind of think so.
That happens.
The bad headline was the story.
The headline writers, you know, don't really understand what they're reading.
Sometimes.
Well, it's ridiculous because you can already change it in. Yeah. Current version of Windows if you want to boot into the desktop. Mm-hmm. And why would they ever force people that have a touch machine to boot into the... No. That's crazy. That makes no sense.
No, but what WZOR, the leaker, Wazor, however you say his name, if you do pronounce it in some way, he posted on February 2nd, he said, you know, you guys don't understand what this is going to be, I don't think. It's going to be... Boot to desktop can be the default on non-touch machines. Like, it can be set as the default on non-touch machines.
On touch machines, too.
Already done.
It exists.
It can be set, I think, by the OEM.
By the OEM.
Oh.
The missing part.
It could be.
Oh.
So, but it,
that's anyway, that totally could be, right?
Yeah. That's an interesting guess because there is one major feature of this release that is actually relegated to OEMs, right? That will only appear on new PCs, mm-hmm. which is the... reduced disk space a lot, you know, usage or whatever. Someone sent me a shot of some comparison of memory usage, claiming that memory usage has gone down in this release as well. I don't think that that means anything. I don't think that anyone has ever examined Windows 8.1 and said, wow, this thing really uses a lot of memory. You know, I don't think this is, I think we're past that kind of an issue, but it is a very real problem when people buy a new Surface or other device that has especially 32 gigs of storage, but 64 gigs, whatever, and more than half of it is taken up by the OS and whatever else is installed on there. And so there is work being done in this release to fix that problem, but we're not going to see it out here. And,
you know, it's like disk footprint, right? That's more disk footprint, like so that you can put Windows 8.1 update one on smaller, cheaper tablets. That's what that's about.
And have more usable space. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's designed for PC makers, device makers.
Yeah. Yeah. That way you can sell a 16 gig Windows 8 tablet.
Yeah, possibly.
Which is all good. You
know, it's so silly in this day and age.
Who would want that?
Yeah.
Because what we want is a Chromebook.
Yeah. Hey, you can get those. Hey, just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
Who uses Internet Explorer anyway?
If you
so the cynical view, Leo, is that everyone uses it. We use it to install Chrome. But
are the biggest market share, right? Isn't it like 60-something percent?
You know what? I'm saying this facetiously because obviously everybody who listens to this show and you guys and we all know about other browsers and in most cases use other browsers.
The truth is I have IE and Chrome running all day long. I use both. I use IE for very specific things, for pinned taskbar type things where I pin sites. The one feature that IE has that is crucial to me that Chrome does not support is the ability to have multiple tabs on a pinned site, I guess you'd call it. So I have all email together in one tab. I have news sites on one tab, you know, in one button. And the taskbar, I love that. The truth is I find IE to be very frustrating. I use IE, it has... In some ways, it's related to the integration with the OS where it can access the hardware in ways that Chrome can't, that I think causes problems, frankly. In some ways, it's just a functional thing. I don't know. But I have a lot of problems with IE, and I find it to be somewhat frustrating. And so for normal web browsing, I actually do use Chrome for the most part.
So do I.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously on an RT device, you don't have a choice. And I think that's in this day and age, now that they fixed the performance issues on RT, you know, with Surface 2, I actually think that's the biggest, maybe the single biggest problem with Windows RT.
Yeah. Inability to run anything but IE.
I hate to say it like that, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, certain. But again, that's a certain kind of user, and not the vast majority of users. As you look at the usage statistics, IE is dominant on Windows. But that's because that's the default, and it's the tyranny of the default. I would guess in businesses, certainly, we have to use IE with some of our vendors. You know,
it's not worth debating, but I would say that, you know, if there was some way to look at like user engagement, by which I mean people actively going out and doing stuff and opening multiple tabs in Windows and browsing the web actively and all that kind of stuff. I don't think a lot of those people are using IE, honestly. I mean, I think that IE usage is either casual or is...
Yeah, it's grandpa.
Work mandated, you know.
It's at work or it's people who just
don't know. I say that without, by the way, without any evidence at all. No,
I think it's accurate.
It's a situation.
Although, of course, there's the three people in the chat room who say, what are you crazy? IE 11 is the best thing since sliced bread. It's incredible. But I think most geeks.
Except that it's not.
Yeah.
So
most geeks.
Offense to anybody. I obviously, you'll find people who do use it and love it and all that stuff. All I can say is I use a lot of computers, and that's not been my experience. Right. You know, right. So whatever. I don't know.
Best you can say about IE is it's not that bad. It sucks less.
Yeah, it's not a great marketing.
Wasn't that? Didn't they do? They did that, didn't they?
They did that. Yeah, it sucks less.
It sucks less.
I think they did it for IE. Actually, I think that was actually. Yeah. It was. Just did that.
Was that guy? That. Remember, he was doing all this stuff, and he had the mugs.
Yeah, that's right. It was IE. Yeah. Now with less sucking.
Yeah. Which is really a tacit acknowledgement from Microsoft that the hardcore geeks.
It's going to be a moment of truth for me if Chrome ever adds this multi-tab pinning thing. That might be the end of it. I don't know.
I think that a lot of geeks use them all. Like I said, I found SleepNear on my system. Just
yeah. Oh, no, I do have. I also have Firefox and Opera.
We have them all, but that's our job is to use them all.
Yep.
In other news, Google will avoid sweeping antitrust violations.
And you know what?
How?
Screw them. Screw them.
Scroogled.
Right. Microsoft gets scroogled in Europe.
I like your illustration to this article, Paul. He does a Google search on how to avoid sweeping antitrust charges.
Thank you. I actually went out of my way to show that to Mary Jo. I was so proud of that. I can't really share this. I could show that to my wife and she'd be like, eh.
Paul, I'm like, we get you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're among friends.
I giggled to myself when I made that this morning. I was so proud of it.
See, I spontaneously said how much I like it.
Look at you. You pulled it right out of there. Thank you.
Boom. Actually, I love all your illustrations. I take care
with them.
And I didn't know this, but the chat room informed me some time ago that you were a graphic artist before you did anything
else. Yeah.
So this is your hobby. Is making goofy illustrations.
This is how I express myself creatively. Yeah. By lashing out at the companies that I cover.
So what is the actual news story here?
Well, so Google is set to, or has, I guess, basically settled with the European Union over the search-related charges. And from my perspective, the big story here is that Microsoft paid over a decade something like $3 billion in fines to the European Union. They were embroiled in this thing forever. Google comes along. I've often said, you know, Google's ability to impact mankind is exponentially greater than Microsoft's. And not only are they not dragged to the courts and charged with anything and fined anything, but the guy from the European Commissioner actually says, look, we're going to charge you. But if you settle first, we won't. And then they spend 2.5 years fielding ineffectual settlement requests from Google until they finally do reach a settlement. And so I to me, the interesting part is, why is it so different? Like, what changed? You know, Microsoft got dragged through the mud forever. In fact, they're still dealing with it in some ways. They had to make a special version of Windows that
the ballot
was napalmed and doesn't have Windows Media Player, the most pointless Windows change of all time. And Google just, you know, let's talk. You know, we'll figure it out. And honestly, I think there are a lot of factors. But, you know, one of them is that, of course, that Google was coming of age when Microsoft was going through this. They were literally forming and becoming a company. And so they have this. They know that this happened. I mean, even Intel dealt with the EU regulators differently than Microsoft did, specifically because of what happened to Microsoft. You know, so when they were charged with antitrust violations in Europe, I think Intel did pay a fine. It was a different age, but they never did they didn't do the case, you know, the trial stuff.
Right.
The other one is that there are different people running the show in Europe these days, right? The Nelly Kroes is long gone. I mean, this woman was, her deal was, we'll stop criminals by, you know, criminal companies or companies that are behaving illegally by fining them as much as we can. And by the way, the European Union can fine them a lot. I mean, they can fine them up to 10% of their annual revenues. Billions and billions of dollars. And that's what she did. And the new guy, Joachim Alkin, I think his name is, he doesn't believe in this philosophy. He believes that you can, that's not the way to stop people from doing the wrong thing, and that the way to do it is to settle. And so it's just a kind of a different, it's like a touchy-feely vibe over there in the EU, you know. And but because it's like a governmental organization, you know, nothing happens quickly. So, you know, years have gone by. There was like a 3-year investigation. We spent a year and a half now going over this stuff, and you know, now they're just going to settle. And so it's a little disappointing having watched and reported on what happened to Microsoft over so many years. And then Google, it's like, you know, you're all set. Thanks.
To be fair, I mean, the EU has a lot of other actions going on against Google, and France and Germany and others are suing them for other things.
Well, the EU has, I would say, one other major thing, which is the Android thing. And there's a product dumping charge, which is, you know, I think is going to be handled in exactly the same way, frankly. Yeah. But and yes, and then there are individual countries. Of course, you know, Google is a huge corporation. So, and they do have a global reach. And so, they're going to run into this kind of antitrust stuff. But, you know, the fact remains it's a different age. And I think a lot of people looked at Microsoft and they looked at what happened to it. Remember, like, it's so weird here in 2014 to think. So let me get this straight. They bundled a browser in their operating system, which, by the way, everybody does. Now it's hilarious.
Right.
And this was such a huge problem. They were going to destroy the planet or something, that you had to drag them through the court for years and years and billions of dollars in fines. And you got them to decouple a media player. So great job on that.
Well done. Bravo.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And then, that product was made pointless by the natural change in the industry. Right. And now everyone uses iPhones and iPads. It's funny. We spent so much time on that. It's just, you know, does Microsoft get a refund?
Yeah.
Like, does the European Union say, like, you know, sorry about that. Here's 50%. I don't think so. I don't think that's going to happen. No. So,
yeah. Oh, well. Mm-hmm. Did you have anything to say about the Google Motorola sale? I forgot that's happened since we met last.
It happened right at the end of Windows Weekly.
That's
last
right.
Week.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think it's interesting because some people had introduced the possibility that Google sold Motorola as part of this antitrust settlement in Europe. Like they were saying, maybe this was a condition. I don't know that it was or wasn't.
Motorola did not have a big presence in Europe, so I doubt it.
No. But anyway, it's still kind of an interesting thing to ponder. Everybody had their 2 cents last week. Was this a bad thing for Microsoft? Was it a good thing for Microsoft? And, you know, I think most people said it proved that Google's patents that they supposedly bought Motorola for, even though they never admitted that publicly, were kind of pointless, although they did end up keeping the patents.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that. I think that they were not pointless, and they did keep them. Yeah.
They kept them, right?
Yep.
Google kept them.
They kept them. They kept most of them. I think they gave
they kept most of them.
2000
but most of them were patents they couldn't really use against Microsoft. As
it wasn't a war chest. It was defensive because remember they have to protect Android or people aren't going to use it. I think it's Google's recognition that really our business is not selling handsets. Our business is getting Android on as many phones as possible and our other software on as many phones as possible. And if we focus
I think they
on
also,
that,
though, bought them thinking they could use them to fight Microsoft and patent wars, and it didn't end up that way for them.
Oh, Rockstar's killing them.
Yeah, Microsoft has been killing
them.
There'd
be a little Apple envy there too. You know, I mean, Microsoft does that with Surface, where people love this stuff. You know, we need a piece of that.
Right. But anyway, I don't know. I've saw some people try to argue that Google selling Motorola was good for Windows Phone. I don't really have an argument to make that is the case.
I don't understand why it would be. They're a minor player in Android.
I don't know. I saw people saying it showed that Microsoft maybe shouldn't have bought Nokia because Google ended up saying you can't own a phone company and still be the software provider.
Well, I did. Yeah, I think there's a lesson for Microsoft there that you go into competition against your OEMs at your peril.
Yeah, they're still got their OEM partners for now, but it's going to be interesting to see if they keep any.
I don't think those are related. There's a unique situation with Nokia that.
Well, here's the upshot. Microsoft will be the only Windows Phone manufacturer. They're the only Windows.
Why is that an upshot?
Well, but that's the upshot. Nobody else is going to compete against them.
No, but in other words, Nokia is 90% of Windows Phone.
And
they're
going out
of business. In other words,
it's
if they didn't buy them.
You're right. Nokia, it's not directly analogous. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. Right, that's what I mean.
In other words, Samsung is going to do a new phone, right? A new Windows phone. There's people who are committed.
This might have made a difference there. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Google's got some concessions from Samsung out of this, by the way.
Right.
And I wouldn't be surprised at all if one of those concessions was, maybe we won't do the Windows phone. Google's saying, look, we're not going to compete against you in hardware. They've killed Nexus. They are saying.
Oh, is that true, by the way?
Well, it's the rumor. We don't know yet. It hasn't happened yet.
I think the Nexus thing is a great idea. I heard they were going to use the Play name on.
They're going to go to Google Play Edition. They will not make their own phones or tablets. They will let the OEMs have the hardware because they make money on Android.
You know what that is? It's signature PC, right?
Yes.
So Google has not just copied it, but they've succeeded with it.
They made it work. Right?
I mean, it's amazing.
That's one of the concessions they got out of Samsung, that they would not only cut back on the crapware, but make it uninstallable. Partly that's the Korean government, too, by the way, which made a law insisting on it. But nevertheless, I think that's exactly what you said. They declared victory in the signature PC war. So I think there is a little bit of a lesson for Microsoft, or maybe Google learned from Microsoft. You compete with your channel at your peril, and it's easy for Google because much like Microsoft, they're a data company. They're not a software company; they're a data company. But they get the data from their software, and they put their software out there. Yeah. And they don't care who makes the Android phone as long as it's an Android phone and Google software is on it.
Well, except that the way things were trending is that Android phone makers were.
Right.
Kind of obscuring Android many
ways. And they got a concession. Yeah. So it could very well be they bought Motorola with that exact point. I think there was a – you know what? Jessica Lesson says, and I think she's right in the information. Larry Page is a grandmaster. And these are all chess moves. And it was very well make sense that he's thinking, well, I need to do this, 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 and this. I need to get I need to get Android purer. And he succeeded. Motorola was never, they didn't sell very many handsets, apparently. So it was a big drain on the bottom line. And they got the patents for whatever they're worth. Anyway, it's not our story.
No.
It's not our problem.
Well, it's still interesting. I mean,
just in terms of a rival to Microsoft how they fight over patents all the time.
It was yesterday that we got all the companies, including Microsoft, releasing their transparency reports.
Right. They're more like translucency reports.
opacity reports.
I find this whole thing to be very odd because, you know, they reached an agreement with the government. These companies did, Microsoft, Google, I think LinkedIn, and maybe Facebook. to be a little more transparent about the requests that they get. But the rules that they have to adhere to are still very strange. I mean, you know, they can, for example, Microsoft said, let me see, this is from January to June 2013. They received fewer than 1,000 FISA requests related to between 15,000 and 15,999 accounts. I thought that's an odd way to
describe it.
But that's part of the requirement. They can only do it in blocks of 1,000. Yeah, it's like, what? That's crazy.
They're all doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, they have to. So it's not that transparent. To me, again, the interesting part of the story isn't necessarily just the transparency report, which frankly is not interesting in the slightest. It's that in the post about this, Microsoft General Counsel, Brad Smith actually kind of criticized the president and the government, I guess implicitly, for not doing more to basically protect these companies from other governments that might be spying on them illegally.
Oh, that's an angle I hadn't thought of.
Yeah. And I thought that was kind of interesting. And so, you know, I thought that was kind of an interesting little dig there, because you kind of read through the report and it's like, yeah. And then all of a sudden there's this sentence that is really critical of the president. And it's like, wow, interesting. So, you know, I guess they're agreeing to certain things, but they still feel very strongly that, you know, Microsoft, the future of their business is these online services. And if people don't trust them, they're going to have bigger problems. And I think that's what they're trying to head off.
And talk about burying the lead. The big story for you and me, Paul. Here it comes, the big update for our Xbox One.
Oh, I thought not the map pack for Call of Duty Ghosts.
I said to him today when we were doing the show notes, I'm like, why don't we have an Xbox story?
Yeah.
She said, God help me.
I said it.
Are you going to mention this Xbox update? Okay. So there was an update on when the Xbox launched. They called it the launch day update. And of course, the Xbox launched in November. And so the next update happened in December, and it happened on Patch Tuesday in December. I thought that was interesting. I wonder if they're going to do this, because going forward, Surface, as you know, does their updates on Patch Tuesday. And then January came and went with no Xbox One update. And I thought that was really strange, because Xbox One, frankly, needs a lot of updates. So this is very much an incomplete product. It's not so much that it's buggy, although anyone who uses the Xbox One could point to certain bugs. It's that there's just stuff that's missing. It's stuff that's been on the Xbox 360 for years. You know, the ability to plug in a USB key or a hard drive and play content that might be on that device. The ability to plug in a keyboard and type on a real keyboard when you have to enter like a 25-digit product key rather than doing it on a hand controller. Which, by the way, if you've ever seen a young person text on an iPhone or some other device and how fast they can go.
Yeah.
My son does that with an Xbox controller, and it is notable.
Now, I saw that it said it wasn't going to be in games.
No, it's just for typing in, you know, filling out forms and things.
See, I want it to be everywhere.
Some people are saying, like, I want to use an Xbox One, but what I want to use is a keyboard and a mouse so I can play it, like, on a PC. Right. And you can't do that because the Xbox One, like the Xbox 360, supports controllers, and that's the level playing field. If you added support for that, those people would have more precise movements than is possible with a controller, and that, you know, it would be like cheating, essentially.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah. So anyway, there is going to be an update in February, and it is going to be on Patch Tuesday. And they've only announced a few of the things that are going to be in it. There's nothing hugely major, but the USB keyboard support is one of them. A couple of other small things, nothing major. But the interesting thing in some ways is that the next one, they also talked about the next one. And the next one is coming on March 4th, which is not a Patch Tuesday. It's like, what the heck? But the reason is it's something to do with Titanfall, or they're doing it ahead of Titanfall.
Oh.
And the way that they described it is that this next update will include many new features and improvements, which they're not talking about, but most significantly to our party and multiplayer systems.
Right.
And I think they want to get this right because they anticipate that Titanfall is going to be a big deal multiplayer. You know, for multiplayer. And I think they want to, you know, figure that out before.
Yeah. Truth is, I wasn't so worried about what features they added, just the fact that they were doing it.
Oh, yeah. I think it's by the time this year is over, I would be surprised if they didn't have at least you know, 8 or 10 major system updates. I bet it falls into a cadence like you see with the Surface. I think that's going to be the normal.
Yeah.
The normal schedule.
It's just the dam broke is mostly what I'm excited about.
Well, I got nervous in January because there wasn't one. And I thought, that's, you know, it's strange because they so desperately need updates, you know.
Yeah.
And so they're back on track.
I don't know why I'm sitting on Mary Jo's picture because she couldn't care less. So let's just pretend.
I will.
Pretending
right.
I care.
We won't stop talking until she nods off.
Yeah. Hey, we're going to take a break. When we come back, our tip of the week, our software pick of the week, and the beer of the week, most importantly. But first, a word from Audible.com. Audible is a great source of audio entertainment because, of course, Audible is the place to get your audio books. I'm a big Audible fan. Paul's a big Audible fan. We've been listening to Audible books for years. When did you start, Paul?
Oh, boy. I don't know. You know, I looked up on my current account. This one goes back not that far. I think it goes back to maybe 2006 or 7. But I actually have a second, another Audible account that's older than that. So it's been at least, you know, at least 8 years. But I'm not 100% sure.
Long time for me. Since 2000. And I've listened to over 500 books. And I love everything about Audible. My next book, by the way, Dog Fight. How Apple and
That's
Google
a good one.
Went to
yeah.
war and started a revolution. I think it was your recommendation that got me to get
That's
it.
A good one.
Just listen to the Everything story, the Jeff Bezos and Amazon story, which is really interesting. Nick Bilton's Hatching Twitter, really great. So it's a great source for tech information, but also science fiction, fantasy, classics too. And what they've been doing lately with this classic series, they call them the signature performances, in a tip of the hat to Microsoft. They get big stars to read classic books. In this case, Kenneth Branagh reading Heart of Darkness, which is the Joseph Conrad inspiration for the Apocalypse Now movie. I mean, that's kind of loose inspiration, but really a classic. They've got a lot of classics. Kids' books, too. The Wind in the Willows, read by Shelley Frazier. They've got The Wonderful World of Oz, read by Anne Hathaway. Audible is a source of 150,000 great books, and not just books. You'll get, for instance, with your Audible subscription, I'm going to tell you how you can get that in a bit, a daily digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, your choice. You also get radio shows, comedy performances, and more. Really pleased that they've brought The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, original BBC radio plays.
Oh, wow.
So I think a lot of people remember the book, the movies. Douglas Adams originally wrote these for the BBC, and it is the best version of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, especially when you know that he was writing these scripts, finishing them seconds before they went on the air. These are the definitive versions of The Hitchhiker's Guide. But I can go on and on. Paul, you got a recommendation you want to share with us?
Yeah, I feel like it's been a while since we've done an Audible pick because I was looking through my library, and I've actually listened to several books since I recall.
Yeah.
Well, there's a book called Driven, which is the history of BMW, which is excellent.
Ooh,
also, like Endurance, which is the Shackleton trip to Antarctica. But last year, you may recall, I kind of jokingly said that I had moved past Stephen King, and I had started reading Joe Hill, who, of course, is Stephen King's son. But I read two full-length, two full-length books from him, Horns and Nosferatu. But he has a collection of short stories that I just started called 20th Century Ghosts. And I think everyone's a little different, but it might be just because of the way I have to listen to Audible. You know, I don't drive to work every day. You know, I listen to Audible books in shorter chunks, and I find short stories to be much better for me personally.
Yes,
so
yes.
This kind of thing is my preference. For this kind of thing. And he has a short story that is on Audible. Is it on Audible? Sorry, let me find him, Joe Hill. Yeah, there's a short story he wrote with his father called In the Tall Grass, which is fantastic. And so I have high hopes for this one. I've just started it. But the collection of short stories that he has is called 20th Century Ghosts. And, you know, so far it's been good.
Good. Yeah. Good, good, good. Lots of good choices. I'll tell you what, here's the deal. Go to audible.com/windows, and we're going to give you a book free. I think you've just had about 20
possible choices. I know.
And now I'm going to get this Hitchhikers thing. I didn't realize that was out.
Oh, I love it.
By the way, I told this story a long time ago. One of the summers we went to Paris on our home swap, I listened to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy as narrated by Stephen Fry.
Oh, that must be awesome.
This is one of the best audible books I've ever listened to. I was laughing hysterically on the Paris metro. I was by myself, and I was crying. I was laughing. I know it's hard to imagine.
You know, it kills me because publishing industry is a weird thing, and it's very national. So Whoever has the rights to the book in that country is who gets to choose the narrator for the book.
Well, Stephen Fry is perfect. And by the way, Martin Freeman, who played the main character in Hobbit. The Hitchhiker's Guide movie, and also was right, the guy from The Hobbit and from Sherlock, does the restaurant at the end of the universe. Oh, also an excellent choice.
That'd be fun.
But there's something about Stephen Fry doing Douglas Adams. I was and the looks I was getting, I actually thought someone was going to lead me off the train. Like, you need to leave now.
You clearly do not laughing belong. Maniacally.
Yeah, like, I don't know what's wrong with you, but you don't know how it works here. It was
Stephen Fry is the narrator for a game called Little Big Planet that I just love. Yeah.
He's amazing.
And it just gives that game a whimsy that is remarkable.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they got a Stephen Fry imitator for the sequel. It's not the same.
Serious?
Yeah. No. He's sort of Stephen Fry. Stephen Fry light.
Yeah. No, he's amazing.
Well, the reason I bring it up is he did the Harry Potter books in England.
Oh, great. But we don't get him here.
We don't get him here because Scholastic owns the right in the U.S., and they got the great Jim Dale, who does a wonderful job.
Well, you
job.
Can get the Hitchhikers with him here. So.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to get this new one. I'm going to get this other one, though. This is neat. I didn't know this.
They've got so many good choices. Go to audible.com/windows. You can see we really like they get the longest ads because we all the hosts at Twit love Audible, and we just start talking about it. audible.com/windows. Give it a try today. You get one book free. You'll join for the gold account. That's a book a month. First 30 days are free. First book is free. Cancel any time. In the first 30 days, pay nothing. But you will keep the book. You'll also get the Daily Digest of the Times or the Wall Street Journal. Free for the first month. audible.com/windows. Time for Paul Thurrott's Tip of the Week.
Now, Leo, I'm buying an Audible book.
Okay. I'm busy.
I have not tried. This is a tip, but I guess it's also a software pick in a way. I found out about this on Twitter today, thanks to Bart W. I've not had the chance to use it, and I'm thankful for that, as you'll soon understand. But Nokia makes a tool called the Nokia Software Recovery Tool.
Okay, we should say really quickly, do not download it.
Well, no, you should. It's okay to download it.
Okay.
But the point of it is, if you are doing a software update in particular on your phone or something that bricks your Lumia smartphone, this can help you recover it, you know, bring it back to life without having to bring it in to be repaired or whatever. And it looks like something that, you know, 90% of Windows Phone users are using Nokia devices. So this is something you should know about. So I've downloaded it. I haven't used it, but I'm very excited to discover it. And so it's kind of a tip just to keep this one at the ready in case you should ever need it. So that was quick.
Oh, I thought you said you bricked your phone. It's so if you case you.
Oh,
brick
no,
it.
No. What I'm saying is, fortunately, I've not needed it. But if you should ever need it, it is there.
Very good.
Yeah. Last week, I talked about the Bing apps for Windows 8.1 and how in the writing of the book, I discovered that these apps are way more wonderful than I thought. And I mentioned that. Well, no, I mean, I knew they were good, but I thought some of the new ones were kind of superfluous or whatever. But actually, you know, they're incredible. I talked about that last week. So last summer, I think last August, Microsoft released the four kind of core Bing apps on Windows Phone as well. Bing Finance, Bing News, Bing Sports, and Bing Weather. And those apps are incredible. I use all of them on my phone every day. They actually get used a lot. But in looking at these Windows 8.1 apps, I started to wonder, you know, they have these new apps now, Windows 8.1. These would be great on the phone. You know, like you can see like a health and fitness app. How wonderful would it be to have that on the phone? Because, you know, you take it when you go. That would make sense. Coincidentally, and it really is a coincidence, Microsoft last week released beta versions of Bing Travel and Bing Food and Drink, which are two of those new Windows 8.1 apps. So that's cool. So you can get them on Windows Phone now as well. They work exactly like their, you know, desk or their PC versions, except they're formed for the small screen and all that kind of stuff. They basically offer the same functionality. The data syncs between them. So if you've created favorites in any of the apps, you can access them from the phone. You can access them on the tablet, you know, back and forth, and that works. The only thing that's missing is the health and fitness app. I think the one that would be the best one to have on a phone, but I assume it's coming because basically now they have every single Bing app that's in Windows is on Windows Phone too. I think I mentioned Health Vault last week. If I didn't, this is Microsoft's central service for storing health-related data.
Very timely, because, of course, everybody's talking about health stuff.
Yeah. So there is a Health Vault app for Windows, I believe, but also for Windows Phone. So yeah, if you're using, say, Fitbit and you know, want to get your health data into a central place, Fitbit integrates with Health Vault. So that stuff will appear in the Windows Phone version.
This is going to be quite a war because Apple looks like they're going to start doing a health passbook, and this is going to be very interesting.
Right. And so I suspect Apple will be very successful doing that. The Microsoft approach is the same approach it's ever been, dating back to, you know, Windows, I guess, or Windows Media Player or whatever, that they integrate with these other services.
Right.
And
so, everything.
Yeah. And so I think that the neat thing about the Bing apps is that they integrate with the services that make sense, you know, and so. For Bing Travel, you get like the Frommers for a lot of the content. You get integration, I think, with Kayak for booking flights. You get integration with, I don't know if it's Priceline or one of the other sites for hotels or whatever it is. So they do all that kind of cross-services integration stuff. These are great apps. So be sure to check these things out if you have Windows Phone.
Twitter's earning report coming out now showing a small profit but beating expectations.
Was their press release 140 characters later?
Because it should. I should go
if
and
it
see.
Isn't, screw those
guys.
Yeah,
they should have done it that way, huh? It would have been good. Not a surprise. Twitter controls exactly how much profit it makes, and they obviously thought, well, let's beat Wall Street by a little bit, not much. Moving along. Thank you, Paul, to our enterprise pick of the week, Mary Jo Foley.
Yes, this may not sound initially like an enterprise pick, but I'll explain why it is. My enterprise pick is Microsoft's investment this week of $15 million in Foursquare.
Wow.
Now, which was announced the same day that they announced Satya Nadella was the new CEO. So it kind of got
buried.
But what's interesting to me about this is the $15 million dollars is not just a pure, hey, we're investing in Foursquare like we did in Facebook. It's more, we actually are going to license some of Foursquare's technology, specifically the location data that they have. And we're going to integrate that back into Bing on Windows 8 and Windows Phone. So what this means is it's more of a big data / machine learning kind of a play almost than it is just Microsoft investing in, you know, a check-in service. And the idea, I think, is going to be we'll see Foursquare's data and some of the API technology that they have show up in things like Bing on Windows Phone, but also Cortana, the Microsoft equivalent of Siri that's going to be part of Windows Phone 8.1. Microsoft will just take this data and mine this data, add it to their own pool of data that they're indexing, and making the results that show up through Cortana, through Bing on phone, and through Bing on Windows 8 more accurate when it comes to local data. So I'm optimistic because I don't have great luck right now with Bing on my Windows phone searching locally, and I'm searching for bars in New York, perhaps. And have very mixed results. They're not
they
always up
get
to
better.
Date.
They should get better. You know, yes. They didn't have to invest $15 million. I do believe that Foursquare licenses that information out.
Yeah.
Path uses it. Lots of other people use it. But they must have wanted more than just the info.
They did. Yeah. They wanted it. They wanted a deeper level of data and access. It's not an exclusive deal, according to reports, but they're getting more than they could get just for free.
Got it. $15 million, good news for Dens.
Yes.
I'm a big Foursquare fan. I like them.
Are you?
Going way back when. Code name of the week.
Yeah, this is a code name from the way back past. I think back to 2003, somewhere around there. The code name is Xdocs, X-D-O-C-S. And that was the code name, it turned out, for InfoPath, which was Microsoft's electronic forms technology that became part of Office. And the reason I picked it as this week's code name is Microsoft announced this week that they're discontinuing InfoPath at long last.
That's a name from history, isn't it?
It is. Yep. So they're going to, this is the last release of InfoPath is InfoPath 2013, which came out last year, and also InfoPath Forms Service for SharePoint. Microsoft says they'll support them both through 2023. So you have a long lead time if you're still an InfoPath user. But instead, what they're going to be doing is developing some kind of a new forms technology that that will be shared across SharePoint, Access, and Word. They aren't telling us what that is, but they said they're going to give us a sneak peek at the SharePoint conference, which is in March this year. So that's kind of interesting. It means to me we're going to start hearing more about the next version of Office probably around March.
The end of the path.
The end of the info path.
As you were talking, I looked this up on my site. The first time I mentioned Xdocs was in 2002.
Was that one?
There were going to be two new applications in what was Office 11. One of them was OneNote, and the other one was Xdocs.
Xdocs, yep.
So it predates this show even.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This show has been going on forever.
Sure.
Especially today.
Yeah. Our beer of the week from the Georgetown Brewing Company.
Okay, I had to pick a Seattle beer this week because of the Seahawks. We haven't even talked about them yet.
I forgot Paul Allen was the owner until I saw him take the trophy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just he kind of walked to his car with it.
He just got it.
I'll take that. I paid for this.
And right now, while we're taping Windows Weekly, there are 700,000 people in Seattle at the parade. So we got to do a beer pick for them. And I went to my favorite, one of my most favorite Seattle brewers, Georgetown Brewing, and I picked a Pilsner, which isn't necessarily my favorite beer style, but this is a very good one.
What distinguishes a Pilsner? They're lighter, right?
They're lighter. They typically are less hoppy.
Yeah.
And the real reason I picked the Rogers Pilsner, though.
They taste more like Coors.
Yeah. Yeah. But not that bad.
Are they, right. Is it pasteurized cheese?
But the main reason I picked Rogers Pilsner was GeekWire had this awesome story about Brian Valentine, who used to be one of the big honchos on Windows, and now he works at Amazon. But he went and he bought a bus, and he turned the bus into a tailgating bus for the Seahawks. And one of the features he has on his bus, it's a short bus.
I was just going to say that.
Perfect.
It would be a short bus.
Yeah.
Look in the back, though. Look at that. Go down. He's got a tap installed on the back of the bus that has Rogers Pilsner pouring right out. Oh,
that's a nice touch.
They call the bus Bustle Wilson.
Get it?
Brother.
Brian Valentine was always a card, and it looks like he still is one.
That's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, it is kind of cool.
You got to tell your story. You have another bear story, though. That we were discussing earlier.
Don't bring that sad story up today.
Oh. Yeah. No. Too soon.
Well, I will. Blue Point Brewing, one of our independent breweries here in New York, is being bought out by Anheuser-Busch, we found out today.
It happens to the best of them.
I know. And you know, I'm not going to totally give up on them. I'm not going to give up on them because...
So they'd probably just leave them alone, I would imagine.
Yeah, they might leave them alone.
They won't change a thing, by the way.
We'd like you to infuse this fake...
Their website is
flavor
down
into
now,
your beer.
By the way. You can go to the front page.
You've been hacked by the Chinese.
Say, yes, I'm 21. Let me in. And boom.
Try the other one. Try the.
Maybe I'm not 21. Well, it's going to take me like to Disneyland. Legal nice. Drinking age in America. Uh-oh. Yeah, that's good.
That's cute.
Yeah.
That's cute.
It's always fun to see where the sites.
They have some awesome beers. One of my favorites is Rastafari.
Oh, right. Yeah, man. Rastafari. Yep. It's got a hempy flavor.
Nice.
Mm. Hey, thank you so much for this great show and your astute analysis of the happenings at Microsoft. As always, really appreciate it. We do this show now Wednesdays. I hope you'll tune in and watch us live, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. on Twit. But, of course, on-demand audio and video is always available. Twit.tv/WW. And then you can also, of course, subscribe, which would be the best thing to do in the Xbox Music Store or wherever. Very much appreciated this week especially, with all the work and the scoops you guys did. We will see you. Paul Thurrotz at the Supersite for Windows, by the way, winsupersite.com. Mary Jo Foley at allaboutmicrosoft.com. You can always go there. Thank you so much for a great show, and we'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.